This is Mornings with Kale in Northern Colorado's Voice, 1310 KFKA.
Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by and feed.
Well, let's just say that you're a little bit concerned about any number of factors at your kid's school. So you go to a school board meeting and let's say, well, tensions are running high when it comes to things like critical race theory or mask mandates or vaccines. Well, once again, I'm borrowing from Jeff Foxworthy. Apparently now, if you're concerned about your kid's school, well, you just might be a domestic terrorist. I kid you not. 808 now, Northern Colorado's Voice, 1031, 1310, KFKA, Mornings with Gail from the Auto Collision Specialist Studios. All right, let's get a little bit of clarity and sanity injected into this conversation. This, as you have AG Merrick Garland, Attorney General, intervening, nosing the Justice Department into, yes, sometimes rather snitty, rather hair-on-fire debates at local school boards. His intervention came after the National School Boards Association wrote to President Biden asking the feds to consider if threats and acts directed at school boards could be the equivalent to a form of domestic terrorism and hate crimes. Again, this is not an endorsement of inappropriate behavior at school board meetings. You shouldn't be threatening your school board officials. And certainly you shouldn't be taking a swing at them. But I don't know. I just never heard that an angry, invested parent is the equivalent of ISIS. Once again, for some clarity and sanity in this discussion, Bob Schaefer is headmaster at Liberty Common School and Liberty Common High School in Fort Collins. Bob, thanks for stepping up to the proverbial plate.
Good morning, Gail. Thank you.
You can tell I'm a little bit riled up over this one. Yes, if you've got people acting like children or like thugs at school board meetings, that there should be repercussions. There should be consequences for that behavior. But the Department of Justice, wouldn't this be a local police matter?
Yeah, it absolutely would be. And, you know, we have to be concerned about preserving the whole notion of the public square, where that is, and where the public square is in the halls of government, in school board meeting rooms, boardrooms, and places of that sort. And we need to be concerned as citizens about preserving the notion of there being in America, in a republic, a battlefield of ideas. And so having people raise their voices and be passionate about their points of view and getting that point across at a meeting such as this is something that needs to be preserved and protected, not something that needs to be squelched in terms of its sense of freedom or openness for freedom of speech by a police agency. Our public officials, even those being yelled at, need to be the first to stand up and defend the right of their constituents to disagree with them. Mm-hmm. And when their first instinct is instead to call a law enforcement agency, or in this case, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, suggesting that there is some national threat of a terroristic sort of context, is unconscionable. So I agree with you. I think everybody agrees and would stipulate that actual threats of violence at one of these meetings is never appropriate, and that's what local law enforcement is there to do. But to suggest, as this collection of school board members, by the way, the ones who are raising this appeal to the FBI, is an association of school board members. So, you know, what that means is that our local school board members are not immune from being involved in this. They may say, oh, I don't agree, or we would never do that here, but they are paying to be associated with this National Association of School Boards that is putting this effort forward. So unless a board disconnects from this national association, I submit that it is guilty of participating in this notion of treating constituents like terrorists simply for having a different point of view, or let's just say a vigorous point of view.
Right. As certainly they're right. Now, I find it fascinating that who was this? Oh, the Secretary of Education basically did the old soft shoe, avoiding answering whether parents should be primary stakeholders in their kids' education. What, are you kidding me?
No, it is the right and responsibility of parents to direct the education and upbringing of their children. Everyone should agree with that. And even these people in Washington or down in Denver at our own Department of Education, they might say they agree with this, with that maxim, but when it comes right down to it, you see evidence over and again that they really don't. They believe that the state has superior authority and superior interest and some superior insight into what is in the best interest of children over and above the interest of parents. There again is that precept, that universal truth, that parents bear the ultimate responsibility and they have the authority to direct the education and upbringing of their children, is inviolable. It should never be a point of debate or contention, and no public official, or let's say public servant, no public servant should remain in authority for long if they act in a way or speak in a way that undermines that very central, universal notion of who is responsible for educating children.
Well, and you talk about a teachable moment, not only for our kids, but for this nation. I mean, as cancel culture reigns supreme, and we are seemingly somewhat conversationally averse, particularly if we have varying opinions on any topic whatsoever. I mean, this has this whole DOJ nosing their way into school board meetings has a very chilling effect on the entire construct of dissent and debate and, yes, liberty.
Yeah. There's a number of things that active and engaged and alert citizens should do. One is we should never elect wimps again for any level of office. Having been an elected official years ago myself, I can tell you, you just don't get into that arena. You don't venture to be a representative of other people's interests at any level of government if you're not prepared to accept the reality that sometimes people are going to disagree, and they are going to disagree vociferously. They are going to be passionate about their viewpoint, and in the world of politics, there really are winners and losers, and you've got to choose sides if you're going to be in this arena. So if you can't handle that, if you are a wimp when it comes to the nature of the job you sign up for, then you should do the honorable thing and resign. And for the rest of us as just voters, we should test that quality in our candidates when they're running for office. And if they fail, we should vote against them. And if they happen to get elected anyway or appointed, we have a duty to vote them out of office because they're just not capable of negotiating the demanding job of making decisions in the public square in a political context. And so yes, you should expect at a town meeting, at a board meeting, you're going to have people who disagree, who raise their voices and hold you accountable, because that's the way authority works. It's the citizens are not accountable to the elected officials. The elected officials are properly public servants, and the citizens are the leaders. We should be holding our public officials accountable in a vocal way. And if they are stepping out of line in an egregious sort of proportion, then the level of communication should be proportional to the public offense. And that means you should scream at them. There is nothing wrong with that. You should be demanding of them at their meetings. You should tell them the way the world is, not have them tell you the way the world is. And all of that should stop short. We can all agree. All of that should stop short of any hint of public violence or physical violence or retaliation or anything that is uncivil. But free speech, even loud free speech, is protected not just by our Constitution. It is a natural right that all of us, just as in exercising our duties to the virtue of justice, must enforce in and among ourselves. If we don't do it, the government won't. It is really up to citizens to enforce and to insist on a standard of virtue in all cases, but justice in this one.
Well, but the concern is that general response to this would be, it's just another battle in the culture wars. It seems as though we are so willing to just give up on liberty.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so many strategies we can pursue. There's no reason, there's no excuse to give up. I realize that bureaucrats and people in government tend to wear down those of us who are working hard out in the free world and just trying to raise our families and run our businesses and mind our own business. But the reality is showing up at these board meetings is a very reasonable, good strategy. It is the kind of strategy that our country was predicated on back in its founding days. Going back to the days when to speak out against the King of England was to commit some act of treason or defiance,
right,
that could get you hanged.
Yeah.
The whole idea of the United States of America was to allow for a place on the planet where citizens would be free to redress their elected officials for the grievances and raise their grievances in any way they see fit. But secondly, so in addition to raising voices and projecting opinion at board meetings, we should be pursuing other strategies that involve moving education in this case closer to the people, meaning we should be replacing board members throughout the country with those who are more disposed to choice. So that, because look, we're talking about critical race theory, whether somebody should wear a mask, a child should wear a mask when they go to school. Let's be honest that there are parents who support this sort of thing. They want critical race theory for their kids. They want their children masked up and have their respiration impaired in school. They want these sorts of things for their kids. There should be schools for those people, and they should have them at their disposal, and they should be able to send their kids there. For everyone else, there should be schools for us too, and so we should be always pushing for choice, whether that's charter schools within a public school context or vouchers within a public school context, so that we can get private providers working as contractors within a marketplace of educational options. And I really think that there is a great opportunity that these kinds of debates are presenting to an American public that's getting more and more aware that one size does not fit all, and that a marketplace of educational options is a superior strategy. And in fact, it's an American strategy to resolving some of these issues. We should not be going to meetings and getting our 1 minute in public, public opinion time at the meetings and speaking out and then sitting down when our time is up. No, we should be starting new schools with our money through a public education system whose objective is to serve all families, all parents, all students in a manner that to them seems in the best interest of their children.
Couldn't say it any better. Bob Schaefer, former congressman, of course, as you alluded to, and, I would say a champion for liberty and free speech as you are. And I certainly appreciate your taking the time and weighing in on this. And it's certainly a conversation that definitely needs to continue. Some great things going on at Liberty Common School, Liberty Common High School. And though time is short, I wanted to talk a little bit about a story that brought a tear to my eye in a good way, as a Liberty Common soccer player battling leukemia was able to rejoin teammates and actually scored a goal. What a great story.
Yeah, that happened on Tuesday. Ezra Black is one of our seniors. In fact, he's our school captain, elected, think student body president, I guess. We have a different system on school leadership here, but he's our school captain here at the school. And early in the, right at the end of summer, ended up getting diagnosed with leukemia and has been hospitalized pretty much since. He had a little break in his treatment regimen. He's being treated in Denver, and he was able to be home for a couple weeks, and he's been stopping in at the school from time to time. He led a school tour last week, and Tuesday he was at he's a soccer player and on the soccer team, and we had a home game. It's homecoming week here this week, and so we had a home game, and he got the suit up, play a few minutes in the game, and then there was a penalty kick at the end. He got put in to kick that penalty kick, and he scored. It was a glorious day. It was really exciting to see that happen, and it was just a high point, not only in a great week of school activities and celebrations here at our school, but just in the history of our school to rally around a great young man like that who's just showing absolute courage in the face of a harrowing situation, a real tragedy. And watching all these kids rally around him is really spectacular.
Absolutely. Well, and I think it doubles down on showing courage on a number of levels in the face of adversity. Hey, just heard from a mutual colleague and friend of ours, John Clark, saying, I am so grateful for Bob. And he just dropped his granddaughter off at Liberty Common. Well, that was at 8:14. Just wanted to let you know. But certainly, let's continue the conversation. Bob Schaefer, Liberty Common School, Liberty Common High School headmaster. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Gail.
Take good care. 8:24 now, Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 1310 KFKA.
The Good Afternoon Guy with Brian Gary. Weekday afternoons at 3 on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. Everything you need to know about Northern Colorado is on NOCO now. Weekdays at 9 on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
All right, getting back to our conversation this morning, talking about the fact that UC Health has denied a kidney transplant to an unvaccinated woman and her donor as well. Well, again, underscoring the fact that your vaccine status increasingly determining where you can go and what you can do and to some degree where you work, as we have seen firings across the country for those who, and some organizations, refuse to get the vaccine. But it does beg the question as to COVID immunity, which is better if you have been infected with COVID and recovered, this is a natural immunity, or is a COVID-19 vaccine superior? 8:45 now, Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 1310 KFKA. Mornings with Gail from the Auto Collision Specialist Studios. Okay, a rather lengthy piece I pulled, and I referenced this earlier this morning, out of Kaiser Health News. And let's just say, when it comes to natural immunity as a result of surviving COVID-19 or one of the vaccines that are available, well, the jury, from a scientific perspective, still kind of pretty much out. So I'll give you both sides of the equation so that you can decide. Writing in Kaiser Health News, Arthur Allen talks about Dr. Aaron Cariati, a psychiatry professor at the University of California, Irvine. Well, he felt that he didn't need to be vaccinated against COVID-19. Because guess what? He had COVID-19 in July of 2020. So in August, he sued to stop the university system vaccination mandate, saying, quote, natural immunity, close quote, had given him and millions of other people protection than any vaccine could. Well, a judge last week dismissed his request for an injunction against the university over its mandate that took effect September 3rd. And while Cariati intends to pursue the case further, legal experts doubt that his and similar lawsuits filed all around the country will ultimately succeed. But all that being said, evidence indeed is growing that contracting SARS-CoV-2, this is the virus that causes COVID-19, is generally as effective as vaccination at stimulating your immune system to prevent the disease. Yet federal officials have been reluctant to recognize any equivalency, citing wide variation in COVID patients' immune responses to infection. And like many disputes during the COVID pandemic, the uncertain value of a prior infection has prompted a host of legal challenges, marketing offers, and yes, political grandstanding, which is to be expected these days. It's what they excel at, even as scientists quietly work in the background to sort out the facts. You see, for decades, doctors have used blood tests to determine whether people are protected against any sort of infectious disease. Pregnant women, for example, are tested for antibodies to rubella to help ensure that their fetuses won't be infected with the rubella virus, which obviously, sadly, tragically, causes devastating birth defects. Hospital workers are screened for measles and chickenpox antibodies to prevent the spread of those diseases. But at this point in time, immunity to COVID seems a little trickier to discern than immunity for those diseases. Now, the FDA has authorized the use of COVID antibody tests, which can cost about $70, to detect past infections. Some tests can distinguish whether the antibodies came from infections or vaccines, but neither the FDA nor the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommend using those tests to assess whether you're in fact immune to COVID. For that, the tests are essentially useless because there's no agreement on the amount or the types of antibodies that would signal protection from the disease. So, in the absence of certainty, and as vaccine mandates increasingly are imposed across the country, lawsuits seek to press that particular issue. But for Cariati, well, the question is simple. The research on natural immunity is quite definitive now, in a statement made to Kaiser Health News. It's better than immunity conferred by vaccines. But you need to remember, such categorical statements are clearly not shared by most in the scientific community. So what does our epidemiologist in chief have to say? Dr. Anthony Fauci. Well, I don't know. For my money, don't mean to be snarky here, but I think at this point, his credibility is about as low as a recent Quinnipiac poll on Joe Biden, on President Joe Biden, coming in at around 38% approval for the president's actions recently. But I think the less said from Dr. Anthony Fauci, who never met a camera or a microphone, he just wasn't ready, willing, and able to start jawing to. What would Anthony Fauci say? Just in case you're curious. Well, he was asked in a CNN interview last month whether infected folks were as well protected as those who have been vaccinated. What did he do? Something out of character for Dr. Fauci. Then again, not so much. He hedged. Here's what he said. There could be an argument that they are. And that's all he had to say about that. But again, it's interesting when you look at some of the data coming out relative to natural immunity. Here's what you will find. Don't know if you came across this yesterday, but there was a story that came out. Let's see, Reuters, U.S. News, pick your poison, as the case may be. But it found that the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine effectiveness drops after 6 months. But compare and contrast, when it comes to natural immunity, came across some, yes, scientific studies that say that natural immunity will protect you upward of 10 months. But unfortunately, As I said earlier, the jury still out. 852 now, Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1, 1310, KFKA.
For the latest on the Broncos, the Nuggets, and the Rockies, listen to The Hull Show, weekdays at noon on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. UNC Bears football and basketball are on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Just a heads up, Highway 60 westbound. The road is closed between Broad Street in Milliken and County Road 19. So keep that in mind. All right, lock it right here. Tanner Schwint, host of NOCO Now, up next.